You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures, the notes from a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Founding a Science of the Spirit, Collected Works, Volume 95, formerly known as At the Gates of Spiritual Science, revised translation by Matthew Barton. This is Lecture 4, entitled Devakan. We have seen how at death we leave behind us the corpse, first of the physical body, then of the etheric body, and finally of the lower astral body. What is left when we have shed these three bodies? The memory picture which comes before the soul at death vanishes the moment the etheric body takes leave of the astral. It sinks into the unconscious, so to speak, and ceases to have any significance for the soul as an immediate impression. But although the picture itself vanishes, something important, something that may be called its fruit, survives. The total harvest of the last life remains like a concentrated essence of forces in the higher astral body, and rests there. But this is a process which has already repeated itself many times. At each death, at the end of each incarnation, this memory picture has appeared before our soul and left behind what I have called a concentrated essence of forces. So, with each life, a picture is added. After his first incarnation, a person had his first memory picture when he died. Then came the second, richer than the first, and so on. The sum total of these pictures produces a kind of new element in man. Before his first death, a human being consists of four bodies. But when he dies for the first time, he takes the first memory picture with him. Thus, on reincarnating for the first time, he has not only his four bodies, but also this product of his former life, the, in quotes, causal body. So now he has five bodies, physical, etheric, astral, ego, and causal. Once this causal body has made its appearance, it remains as a product of previous lives. Now we can understand the difference between individuals. Some of them have lived through many lives, and so have added many pages to their book of life. They have developed to a high level and possess a rich causal body. Others have been through only a few lives, hence they have gathered fewer fruits and have a less developed causal body. What is the purpose of our repeated appearance on earth? If there were no connection between the various incarnations, the whole process would, of course, be senseless, but that is not how it goes. Think how different life was for a person who was incarnated a few centuries after Christ, compared with the conditions he will find when he reincarnates today. Nowadays, a child's life, between the 6th and 14th year, is taken up with acquiring knowledge, reading, writing, and so on. Opportunities for the cultivation and development of human personality are very different from what they were in the past. A person's incarnations are ordered in such a way that he returns to the earth only when he will find quite new conditions and possibilities of development. And after a few centuries, this will always be the case. Think how quickly the earth is developing in every respect. Only a few thousand years ago, this region here was covered with primeval forests, full of wild beasts. People lived in caves, wore animal skins, and had only the most primitive knowledge of how to light a fire or make tools. How different it all is today. We can see how the face of the earth has been transformed in a relatively short time. Someone who lived in the days of the ancient Germanic people had a picture of the world quite different from the picture which prevails today among people who learn to read and write. As the earth changes, human beings learn quite new things and make them their own. What is the usual period between two incarnations, and on what does it depend? The following considerations will give us the answer, and we shall see how the changing conditions of the earth come into it. In the course of time, certain beings have been worshipped or honored as holy symbols. For example, in Persia, in 3000 BC, the twins, Gemini, were specially honored. Between 3000 BC and 800 BC, the sacred bull Apis, Taurus, was revered in Egypt, and the Mithras bull in Asia Minor. After 800 BC, another animal came to the fore, the ram or lamb, Ares. So arose the legend of Jason, who went to fetch the golden fleece from the sacred ram in Asia beyond the sea. The lamb was so highly revered that in due time Christ called himself the Lamb of God. And the first Christian symbol was not the cross with the Savior hanging on it, but the cross together with the Lamb. This means that there were three successive periods of civilization, each associated with important happenings in the heavens. The sun takes its course in the sky along a particular path, the ecliptic, and at the beginning of spring, in a given epoch, it rises at a particular point in the zodiac. So in the year 3000 BC, the sun rose in spring in the constellation of the bull, before that in the constellation of the ram. This vernal point moves slowly backward round the zodiac year by year, taking 2160 years to pass from one constellation to the next, and people chose, as the symbol of their reverence, the heavenly sign in which the vernal sun appeared. If today we were able to understand the powerful feelings and the exalted states of mind which the ancients experienced as the sun passed on into a new constellation, we should understand also the significance of the moment when the sun entered the sign of Pisces. But for the materialism of our time, no such understanding is possible. What was it, then, that people saw in this process? The ancients saw it as an embodiment of the forces of nature. In winter, these forces were asleep, but in spring they were recalled to life by the sun. Hence, the constellation in which the sun appeared in spring symbolized these reawakening forces. It gave new strength to the sun, and was felt to be worthy of particular reverence. The ancients knew that something important was connected with this movement of the sun round the zodiac, for it meant that the sun's rays fell on the earth under quite different conditions as time went on. This period of 2160 years does indeed signify a complete change in the conditions of life on earth. And this is the length of time spent in Devakan between death and a new birth. Occultism has always recognized these 2160 years as a period during which conditions on earth change sufficiently for a person to gain new experience when he reappears there. We must remember, however, that during this period a person is generally born twice, once as a man and once as a woman, so that on average, the interval between two incarnations is in fact about 1,000 years. It is not true that there is a change from male to female at every seventh incarnation. The experiences of the soul are obviously very different in a male incarnation from those it encounters in a female incarnation. Hence the general rule is that a soul appears once as a man and once as a woman during this period of 2,160 years. A person will then have had all the experiences available to him under the conditions of that period, and will have had the possibility and opportunity to add a new page to his book of life. These radical changes in the conditions on earth provide a schooling for the soul. That is the purpose of reincarnation. A man takes with him into Devakan his causal body, which is the fruit of the memory picture of his past life. And the purified, ennobled parts of his astral and etheric bodies, these belong to him permanently, and he never loses them. At a particular moment, just after he has laid aside his astral corpse, he stands face to face with himself as if he were looking at himself from the outside. That is the moment when he enters Devakan. Devakan has four divisions: 1, the continents; 2, the rivers and oceans; 3, the airy region, etheric space; 4, the region of spiritual archetypes. In the first realm, everything is seen as though in a photographic negative. Everything physical that has ever existed on this earth, whether as mineral, plant, or animal, and everything physical that still exists, appears as a negative. And if you see yourself in this negative form, as one among all the others, you will be in Devakan. What is the point of seeing yourself in this way? You do not see yourself once only, but by degrees you come to see yourself as you were in former lives, and this is a deep purpose. Goethe says, quote, "The eye is formed by the light, for the light," close quote. He means that light is the creator of the eye, and this is perfectly true. EYE, by the way. We see how true it is if we observe how the eye degenerates in the absence of light. For example, in Kentucky, certain creatures long ago made caves their dwelling. The caves were dark, and so the creatures did not need eyes. Gradually they lost the light of the eyes, and their eyes atrophied. The vital fluids which had formerly nourished their eyes were diverted to another organ, which was now more useful for them. These creatures then lost their sight because their whole world was without light. The absence of light destroyed their power of sight. Thus, if there were no light, there would be no eyes. The forces which create the eye are in the light, just as the forces which create the ear are in the world of sound. In short, all the organs of the body are built up by the creative forces of the universe. If you ask what has built the brain, the answer is that without thinking, there would be no brain. A Kepler or Galileo uses his reasoning power to understand the great laws of nature, but who created the organ of understanding? The wisdom at work in nature. We enter the earthly world with our organs in a certain degree of perfection. During the interval since our last incarnation, however, new conditions have arisen, and we have to work upon them with our spirit. In all our experiences, there is a creative power. Our eyes and the understanding which we already possess were formed in an earlier incarnation. When we reach Devakan after death, we find the picture of our body as it was in our last life, and within us we still carry the fruits of the memory picture of this last life. It is now possible for us to compare the course of our development through various lives, what we were like before the experiences of this last life, and what we can become when the experiences of this latest life are added to those of the others. Accordingly, we form for ourselves a picture of a new body, standing one level higher than our previous bodies. At the first stage, in Devakan, therefore, a human being corrects the shortcomings which his previous life picture shows him, and out of the fruits of his former lives, he prepares the picture of his body for his next incarnation. At the second stage of Devakan, life pulsates as a reality, as though in rivers and streams. During earthly existence, a person has life within him, and he cannot perceive it. Now he sees it streaming past, and he uses it to animate the form he had built up at the first stage. At the third stage of Devakan, we are surrounded by all the passions and feelings of our past life. But now they come before us as clouds, thunder, and lightning. We see all this, as it were, objectively. We learn to understand it and to observe it as we observe physical things on earth, and we gather all the experiences of our feeling life, of our soul. By dint of seeing these pictures of the life of soul, we are able to incorporate their particular qualities, and thus endow with soul the body we had formed at the first stage. That is the purpose of Devakan. We have to advance a stage further there, so we ourselves prepare the image of our body for the next incarnation. That is one of our tasks in Devakan, but we have many others also. We are by no means concerned only with ourselves. Everything we do there is done in full consciousness. We live consciously in Devakan, and statements to the contrary in theosophical books are false. How is this to be understood? When I am asleep, my astral body leaves the physical and etheric bodies, and consciousness leaves me also. But that is true only while the astral body is engaged on its usual task of repairing and restoring harmony to the weary and worked-out physical body. Once I have died, my astral body no longer has this task to perform, and in proportion as it is released from this task, consciousness awakens. During earthly life, consciousness is darkened and hemmed in by the physical forces of the body. And at night I have to work on this physical body. When the forces of the astral body are released after death, its own specific organs immediately emerge. These are the seven lotus flowers, the chakras. Clairvoyant artists have been aware of this and have used it as a symbol in their works. Michelangelo, for example, created his statue of Moses with two little horns. The lotus flowers are distributed as follows. The two-petaled lotus flower at the base of the nose, between the eyebrows. The 16-petaled lotus flower in the region of the larynx. The 12-petaled lotus flower in the neighborhood of the heart. The 8- or 10-petaled lotus flower close to the pit of the stomach. The 6 and a 4-petaled lotus flower are to be found lower down. These astral organs are hardly observable in the ordinary human being of today, but if he becomes clairvoyant or goes into a state of trance, they stand out in shining living colors and are in motion. Directly the lotus flowers are in motion, a person perceives the astral world. But the difference between physical and astral organs is that the physical organs are passive and allow everything to act on them from outside. Eye, ear, and so on have to wait until light or sound brings them a message. Spiritual organs, on the other hand, are active. They actively embrace and grasp what is before them. But this activity can awaken only when the forces of the astral body are not otherwise employed. Then they stream into the lotus flowers. Even in Kamaloka, as long as the lower parts of the astral body are still united with the human being, the astral organs are dimmed. It is only when the astral corpse has been discarded and nothing remains with us except what we have acquired as permanent parts of ourselves, that is, at the entrance to Devakan, that these astral sense organs wake to full activity. And in Devakan we live with them in a high degree of consciousness. It is incorrect for theosophical books to say that man is asleep in Devakan, incorrect that he is concerned only with himself, or that relationships begun on earth are not continued there. On the contrary, a friendship truly founded on spiritual affinity continues with great intensity. The circumstances of physical life on earth bring about real experiences there. The inwardness of friendship brings nourishment to the communion of spirits in Devakan and enriches it with new patterns. It is precisely this which feeds the soul there. Likewise, an elevated aesthetic enjoyment of nature is nourishment for the life of the soul in Devakan. All this is what nourishes human beings in Devakan. Friendships are, as it were, the environment with which we surround ourselves there. Physical conditions all too often cut across these relationships on earth. In Devakan, the way in which two friends are together depends only on the intensity of their friendship. To form such relationships on earth provides experiences for life in Devakan. The end of Lecture 4.